Good evening, James McCanny here with My Science Hour, November 18th, 2021, and a big welcome to everybody. A lot of new people. Thank you for joining us. And so I'll first give a little bit of a summary here. This show is about science, the James McCanny Science Hour at the Crossroads, because many times in this world we are at the crossroads. This show has been airing since the around the year 2000, so about 20 plus years, and going strong in the exact same time slot. And unlike any other show you probably see or watch on TV or listen to on the radio or on the internet, etc., this is brought to you commercial free. I pay for my own airtime. I don't have sponsors. And the only thing that I have is people buying my excellent products. Books, DVDs, CDs, and my water filter products, the wing generator, the patented, trademarked, tremendously efficient wind generator system that I developed. Okay, so anyway, enough of that. Tonight's main science topic, I'm going to be talking about the Peruvian people. Let's just say it as they are. They're not special people. They're not shamans. They're not... But there are groups of people and families, a lot of times, who go up high into the mountains, into the Andes Mountains in Peru, and they have, I guess, the equivalent of what we would call religious ceremonies. And I want to talk about the physics of why they do this. And this is in a series I've been developing since, I think it started in kind of early August of this year, a series of lectures on this program called Electric Highways to the Stars. However, that term goes back to the early 1980s when I was in private military meetings out in the West Coast selling and marketing my space propulsion system products, electromagnetic propulsion systems, because I learned early in my work in the late 1970s that the outer space is has many electric fields and electric currents flowing. And I not only discovered that these were happening, and other people had made measurements, they had discovered things, they had seen things, they had observed phenomena, but they had no idea where it came from. And so what I did is I did the theoretical work to understand what the causes of these were. And Earth is immersed in these in my weather book. I call it the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, one of my books. I describe 17 electrical batteries, local electrical batteries, LEBs, as I call them, that are around the Earth. And these have direct effects on Earth, on Earth's weather, etc. But at any rate, tonight, as the people, and this is not just in Peru, this is not just the Incas, but people all over the world have gone to various high elevations. But you don't have to go to a high elevation. You can go out in the desert. You can go out into the middle of any place with the open sky and make contact with the vertical electric field. And so if you're thinking, oh my goodness, what's this guy talking about? Well, let me just put it this way. The vertical electric field of the atmosphere where we live, if you're outside, not in your house, not in a building, but outside, is 300 volts per meter. Now, to give you an idea of volts, the batteries you put in a little flashlight or in the mouse in your computer is 1.5 volts. And so it would be the equivalent of 1.5 to get 300 volts. You would need 250 of these strung together in series to make 300 volts. And if you're 2 meters tall, then you would have about 600 volts, which means you would have about 400 of these batteries hooked from one end to the other in series to create that 600 volts. It's a DC voltage. It's not alternating. And then people will say, well, how come we don't see this massive amount of electricity flowing through the atmosphere? And that is because we have a thing called the atmosphere, which is a dielectric. The atoms in the atmosphere make up a very good dielectric, which is a shielding, which prevents the capacitor, which is the top capacitor is up in the ionosphere, and the bottom part of that capacitor is the ground you stand on. And so that air prevents that discharge. But every now and then, for example, when the clouds roll in, you can have an electrical discharge out of the clouds. And that electrical discharge is actually a completed circuit all the way up to the ionosphere down to the ground. And so you can break that down, and there's other ways that we have learned to artificially break that down, but that's not the topic of this show. The topic of this show is just imagine that you have 600 volts between when you go outside and you stand up outside and you're standing on the ground, not on a pad of cement, but on the ground, you have 600 volts from the top of your head to your feet. And you become basically a conduit of electricity, and that electricity, that voltage, has an effect on your on the physical processes in your body. And not the least of which, let me just put it this way. As human beings, we are very, very electrical. Your nervous system, for example, is electrical. What happens when, say, you sit down and you take your finger and you put it out in front of you on the table? All of the movements that you needed to sit down and then put your finger on the table in front of you or the desk, all of those movements happen because electrical currents are flowing between synapses, which are little connectors in the nerve cells throughout your body that send signals. And those signals end up in muscles, and those muscles contract and they relax. And that's the two things that muscles do. And your body is full of muscles. There's over 600 muscles in your body, and your body is sending signals to them all of the time. Except pretty much when you sleep, your body relaxes, and all that signaling stops to give your brain and the rest of your body a rest. But all of those muscles, those 600 little muscles, most of them are little teeny muscles. And another name I have for those muscles are the starter muscles. Any movement that you have your big muscles, like say you're a power weightlifter and you lift up heavy, heavy lifting weights and you can lift them above your head, hundreds of pounds, and then let them back down. The main muscles that do that are the big muscles, and you don't have many of those in your body compared to the 600. But to start each motion, where a joint in your fingers, in your hands, in your wrists, in your elbows, in your shoulders, in your back, all in your stomach, etc. All of those muscles, the big muscles, contract and bend and move, but it's the little muscles that start the motion. So you'll see people who are real big and muscle-bound, and they kind of walk around like one of those Transformer characters in the movies. Because their little muscles, they never developed. They never developed the little muscles. And so the big, strong people, their big muscles are very strong, but their little muscles are disproportionately weak. They don't have enough strength to get those big muscles moving. And so so big muscle-bound people don't move very fast because their little muscles are not developed, the ones that start the motion. So, for example, if you're running, your muscles are pulling and they're moving back and forth and back and forth. And they're contracting and expanding, relaxing, contracting and relaxing. And that's what the combination of all these muscles makes you run. But every time you change directions, those little muscles are the ones that start the motion in the other direction. And if you're weak, then if those little muscles are weak, then you're not going to be able to run very fast. And so you find runners, a lot of times their big muscles are not very big, because that's not what makes you run fast. What makes you run fast are the little muscles that can change directions quickly. Okay, Well, so much for that. But why am I talking about this? Because your body is extremely electrical. You are an antenna. You are receiving signals. You're giving off signals. Your brain is an antenna. It's receiving signals. It's giving off signals. And you, whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not, are communicating your feelings to people next to you. If you're angry, you come into a room, other people sense it. And I'm very susceptible to people. For example, people who play video games. If I come into a room and there's somebody in that room that has played a lot of video games, it's like they drag the energy out of my system because their energy level is extremely low. Because playing video games is like being on drugs, like on heroin. Those are facts, because it neutralizes your nervous system. Because all you have to do is see something and click and click and move this, and there's about four emotions that go between your head, your brain, your eyes, your brain, and back down to your hands. And that's why they're called flick games, because your fingers are just flicking back and forth. And there's really not a lot of intelligence, so you'll find that people that do a lot of video games kind of are like, let me just put it this way, because I know there's people out there that are addicted to these games, adults, kids alike, and they have lost mental capacity because of playing these games. But the end result is that these are electrical signalings. And their normal electrical signalings, their intelligence patterns are not working at all. And that's what happens when somebody does, say, hard drugs. Their nervous system shuts down, their brain shuts down, a lot of it. And they become addicted to this feeling and continue to get worse and worse and worse until, in a lot of cases, they actually end up dying. But that's in severe drug addiction cases. But once again, this is all related to the electrical circuitry in your body. And so let's look at some of the different aspects of the human body. There's the physical part, and if you went to public schools, that's probably the only thing you've ever been taught about is the physical part, and they've taught you in through public education or mandated education or accredited education, whatever you want to call it, which even homeschools are required to study. What they teach you is basically you're just a monkey. You evolved from the monkeys. That's what they teach you. I'm not teaching this, but that's what they teach you. You're an evolved species. You came from the monkey. So there's nothing more to you. Here, you're just a little bit smarter monkey. You can run a computer. You can sit at a desk. You can go down and buy hamburgers. And you can do more intelligent things. You can work on an assembly line building cars. But basically what they're telling you is you're just an evolved monkey, a little bit smarter than the ones out there in the jungle. And so anyway, that's what they're teaching you. But the reality is, and this is, people certainly don't listen to this, or certainly don't learn this in schools, and no matter what level of education you go to, PhD or beyond, from the time you go to preschool or kindergarten, they're showing you a picture of man evolving from an ape. And the thing that's missing here is your many aspects of the human species, which is your spirit. And I'm going to split this into two a little bit, because your spirit is something that gives you that human being characteristic that makes you you. You're different. Your spirit is very different than anybody else's. And also your soul. Now, your soul is related to your spirit, but your soul is a more ethereal concept. And these are living inside your body. When the person dies, these leave the body. Because the body is temporary and the spirits are live afterwards, or they were there before and they during and after the physical human body, but they're connected to it. And so, for example, what is the difference between you and a monkey? Well, let's say that you're doing mathematical problems. You can learn, and part of your creativity, let's say instead of doing mathematics, let's say you're creating music. Let's say you're Mozart, and you're sitting down and you have this spirit and you want to create music that reflects that spirit. So Mozart and the spirit of Mozart are creating this, and the physical body of Mozart is the one that's transferring it into violins and pianos and concertos and different styles of music, and organizing this and harmonizing it, etc. Or any of the great composers, and they had a feeling that they wanted to transmit through their music. But this is their spirit, and that's, in fact, there's a type of music, it's called soul music. And the reason it's called soul music is because it's from the soul. And this came from the black people who've had many hard times in their existence. And so if you go down to, say, New Orleans or the southern cities where blues is big, it's soul music. It comes from the soul. It talks about happiness and frustration and difficulties of life and all of the different aspects of the but it's soul music. It comes from the spirit, from within, and when people sing it, you feel it. You feel those same sentiments. Or if you look at art, the same thing happens. The artist portrays sadness or laughter or all of the different emotions all at the same time. And this is the soul, the spirit part of the human being. Then there's your aura. And really, there's no scientific measurement or scientific explanation. There's no scientific understanding of what your aura is. And let me explain something about your aura. I have seen many human auras, including my own. And the way you do this is you go into a room that's absolutely dark. And one of the times when I did it, like even when you're outside at night, there's always some light coming and you're not going to see it. Even on the darkest night with the clouds and no moon, etc., there's typically a little bit of light coming from somewhere. And the aura is so faint that you have to have absolutely dark conditions. So the only way to get this is to go into, the time I did it was in a classroom. We took about 15 students into a classroom and shut the door, and this was at night, so there was no light coming in from the hallway or any under the door, etc. And then everybody closed their eyes for 15 minutes. And then when we opened our eyes, they were adjusted to the lowest light level possible, meaning your eye pupils were opened the maximum amount, searching for light. And when we opened our eyes, we could see the auras of the other people. You could not see the people because it was dark, but you could see their auras. Now, what is an aura? And I'm a scientist. I'm a physicist. I've studied all kinds of physical phenomena, etc., electrical phenomena, and it's none of these. It's none of the above. It's none of the things that you would normally measure in a laboratory. So the human aura, and they're all different. They're all different. And I'm not going to describe them on the air, but you could imagine that every person had an aura that was shaped very much differently. And so anyway, that's another aspect of the human being. And then also your feelings. And this is something, let me just step back a little bit here also. In the mid-1990s, I was working with Russian scientists at the University of Novosibirsk. We were exchanging scientific concepts, and they had become very interested in my electrical nature of the universe, all of my work, because it was explaining physical phenomena that they had observed. They were atmospheric scientists. Primarily physicists, they were also involved in the Russian space program, But, for example, they were part of a group of scientists that went out to the Tunguska site to see what had happened there where all the trees are blown down. And when you get to the center of the impact, whatever was there, there's nothing there. There's no hole in the ground. There's nothing. It's just, it's like something happened, but there's no physical. But all the trees have all of the bark burned off of them, literally burned off of them. So something extremely hot. So anyway, they came to the conclusion that it was an electrical discharge that occurred there. But it's not the kind of electrical discharge that comes from the clouds. Because when that event happened, the local people around there who live 10, 20 miles away, said that the nights before this happened, there was a light up in the sky, kind of a faint light that just filled the sky. And then, boom, this happened. And then that faint light continued on afterwards for a number of days and then went away. So what I concluded was that this was a comet passing by, probably a small comet and maybe to the sunward side of Earth, but it connected electrically with Earth, and we have other points in history where the same type of electrical connection happened with Moses, a very famous one with Moses, the pillar of fire reaching up into the sky. They called it a tornado or pillar of fire. And that was an electrical discharge from a passing comet that we know is true. But at any rate, we were studying these atmospheric phenomena, and I was explaining to them with my theoretical work how these things worked. And interestingly enough, at the same university, the professors in the psychology department got wind of our exchanges going on, dealing with the physics of atmospheric electricity, etc. And the psychologists at the university were doing studies on prenatal babies. In other words, babies that were still in the mother's womb, and they were making measurements, electrical measurements, etc. And what they realized is these babies were communicating electrically. They were sending out signals and receiving signals and responding to them. And they were communicating, and what they realized also is this was related to the position of the planets. And so at any rate, then they realized also that when the baby was born, that the position of the planets was instrumental in forming a reactive type of reactions with the baby. And so they were measuring this, but then again, they did not understand. Well, why would the planets have some kind of electrical interaction with babies? And so anyway, when I started explaining that all of the planets are discharging the solar capacitor, they all are signaling, and they all have electrical conduits in the solar system, then they realized that that is what was going on, and that what happened at the point of birth, and this is why the point of birth is very important, is because all of a sudden all of the senses kick in, sight and sound and smell and taste and touch. All of these senses kick in, and the body is flooded. It's inundated with feelings and sight. And all of these previous communications that were going on electrically become secondary. They become somewhat drowned out in this sea of information that's flooding into the baby's brain and starting to interpret it and see and develop, etc. And so anyway, the reason I'm talking about this is because they established that human beings are acting like antennas. They're acting like antennas. And they're transmitting and receiving. They're not just receiving, they're transmitting and receiving. And then this carries on as the people grow, but most people lose this, but some people don't. So you find some people that develop and continue to develop this transmittal, this transmission of electromagnetic signaling and telecommunications, if you want to call it that, which I think is a good name, with their environment. Okay, just a little side note, now that we have 4G, 5G, and before that 3G telephone service, this is drowning out people's ability to communicate in a natural environment, electrically and as antennas. So it's shutting down the human, traditional human ability to communicate with these very subtle techniques that are basically there from birth. But are people being actually shut out from this before they're even born today? And is it being done on purpose? Okay, so I'm not going to go down that road anymore. That's a topic for a different day, a different program. But anyway, why am I talking about all this when my intended topic was to talk about the people in Peru who go up high to the mountaintops and communicate? Well, I started out by talking about the vertical electric field. And if you have a 600-volt battery going from the top of your head to the tip of your toes, then I would say this is going to augment your telecommunication abilities. And now, when you add to this fact that once you get a group of people together and they're all concentrating on the same thing and they're outside in the vertical electric field, now what happens when you go up to the top of the mountain? How come that's different? You're not any taller. The difference between the top of your head and the bottom of your feet is not any bigger. You're not taller. You're not larger. So why would you go up higher in the atmosphere to get a better effect? And the reason is, I alluded to this earlier, is that because the atmosphere is a dielectric. And so the ability of the atmosphere to discharge is much less when you're down at sea level because the atmosphere is much denser. So you go up to the very highest place possible because now your feet are on the ground, which is the equivalent, say you're 10,000 feet or 12 or 14 or 16 or 18,000 feet, or in some cases even higher, and your feet are on the ground, all of a sudden now that ground is the same ground potential as 20,000 feet below. All of a sudden you have a tremendous amplification of all of these capabilities because you are an antenna. Antenna is signaling electromagnetically. And if you have a battery that's much more powerful traversing your body, then all of a sudden you are you have a much greater ability to use these human characteristics. And so this is not something they talk about. This is not something that is, you know, they don't build churches on the top of the mountain. They don't even build buildings. They go up there and they're outside. And this is one of the very important things I've been talking about recently, is you have to be outside. You don't have to go up to a mountaintop. But what helps is going up into some hills. The Hollywood Hills, for example, would be a wonderful place if you're in California. If you're out in L.A., go up to the top of the Hollywood Hills, and that gets you elevated to a much higher potential, even though it's not that high. So being on a cliff or a ridge, and you'll find that the prophets, you find this in the Old Testament, for example, when Moses went up to Mount Sinai. And if you've ever seen this, where Moses went, it's a pinnacle. It's a high place. And he went up to have some discussions with his creator. And all of these people talk in these same terms because they know that there's a higher power there in their ability. The people that really understood this knew that their ability to communicate, to connect in, was much better when they went up to a high elevation. And remember, that's where Moses got the Ten Commandments. They were burned into the stone tablets, and he brought them back down with him. So at any rate, there again, you'll find repeatedly the references to atmospheric electricity. And I could go on and on about that particular topic, the Ark of the Covenant, the pillar of fire with Moses, the I could just go on and on about references in old texts and in ancient writings relative to this. For example, if you're interested in archaeology, how about Machu Picchu? where the it's up on a mountaintop in Peru in the Andes Mountains, and it's a place religious. Religious is a wrong word. It has too many connotations, but it's the closest word we have to describe the ethereal communication, let's just put it that way, that was used by the people who would go to Machu Picchu and connect. Now, I've personally been to Machu Picchu. I spent a day there and as a tourist, but what was interesting is the tour guide, the day I was there, it was an absolutely pristine blue sky from horizon to horizon. I don't think there was a cloud in the sky the entire day. And the guide said, you know, he didn't know who I was. You know, I'm just another tourist there in the group. And the guide says, I don't know what's going on today, but we never, ever, and he had been there like 20, 25 years as a guide at Machu Picchu, a local person who grew up there. He said he's never seen a day when it was blue like that all day long, which was very interesting. And I have pictures of this. I posted some on my webpage of my photos. There's a beautiful one of a llama laying out in the grass, the pasture, in the middle of the building structure, Machu Picchu, and a perfectly blue sky in the background, and, you know, up above the mountains. And so there's another mountain that's right next, another peak that's right next to Machu Picchu, the city, and it goes up much higher, and there's a little path you can go over and go up that. And I'm not a mountain climber. I was when I was young, but I don't need to fall off of rocks to prove a point. You know, I made it this far without doing anything stupid, so I'll try and not accentuate any dangerous situations. But there is another peak. It's like a pinnacle that's right next to the city of Machu Picchu, and people go up there to get to even a higher elevation. And then if you look at the mountain ranges around Machu Picchu, they're a little bit higher, but they're in the distance. So in Machu Picchu, you would get a very good connection to the vertical electric field. And it always helps to have moisture in the ground to facilitate that electrical connection. Okay, so now, with all of this said, hopefully you're getting to understand the idea of the people going up to the high elevations to have I won't even call it religious, I'll call it a contact. And contact is a terrible name because that has too many English connotations also. Let me think. What's a good name? I will just call it an ethereal experience. In other words, an experience that you're not going to have under normal circumstances. And the fact that you go up with a group, and also typically they take something to concentrate on. And so what happens is if all of the people begin to concentrate on the same thing at the same time, their mental capacities become connected. Let's just put it that way. And there's a tremendous power, more than exponential power, that occurs when a group of people do this. And you'll find that a lot of the great prophets talked about this. And Christ, for example, said if two or more of you are joined in referencing me, then you become more powerful. That's basically what he said. And he's referring to this property that when people become together. And now I want to add something here, and this is not in a building. So this was not talking to Christ. You'll see, he never taught to the masses inside of a building. He held the Last Supper from what we understand, in a building. But as far as talking to the masses, he was always outside. And so it's important to understand, and you know, when all of the churches and then the mosques, you know, the Muslim mosques which came later, and the Buddhist worship, etc., a lot of these people still worship outside. you know, they're outside when they do any worship or any, I wouldn't even call them prayers. They're services. Let's just call them services. And so being outside is one of the key factors. And when people build churches, although they're very nice churches, the, you know, very big cathedrals, etc., and they always have that big steeple, it's called, which is the big extended part going up to connect. And what's up at the very top is a metal cross. And to put something like that up there, you'd need a wire, a grounding wire up there. So what that's going to do is cancel out any electrical fields that are down below. And so you're basically short-circuiting the atmosphere when you're inside of a church or building. And so in typically, whether you're in a mosque or in a church, up at the very upper point of whatever it is, whether it's a big dome or whatever, will be some kind of metal symbol. And then that has to be grounded. So basically, you're short-circuiting any atmospheric electricity. And so my point has always been that you have to be outside. You have to go outside and become grounded. And so you also have to be a bit careful because, for example, golfers, one of the big dangers of a golfer is to be out in the middle of a golf course when a thunderstorm rolls through. So when there's atmospheric discharges going on, you have to, and don't go under a tree. A tree is the worst place you can be on a golf course because that's sticking up in the air. If the lightning comes, it's going to hit that tree. The lightning travels through the ground, comes up one leg, goes down the other. If it crosses your heart, it could kill you. And that's why, say, groups of cows sometimes are found dead beneath a tree because that tree got hit with lightning and the electrical current went out, up one leg across the heart, and then back down, and then stopping the heart, canceling out the signaling in the heart, and killing the animals. But anyway, just giving you a little bit of understanding about electricity, atmospheric electricity, and how it works relative to the human body. So anyway, the other thing I'm saying is always be careful if there's atmospheric lightning, in other words, atmospheric discharges, in other words, lightning in the area, then you want to be very careful not to be outside. And that's not conducive to what we're talking about here. What's conducive is just the normal, you know, nice sunny day, electrical, vertical electric field that you can, your body will basically attach to just by being there. Okay, so I'm going to summarize a little bit here, and then I've got a few other topics I want to cover before the end of this show. So to summarize, this whole discussion going back to August, every show since August, has the main theme has been electric highways to the stars. I talked about in the very beginning about the electromagnetic propulsion systems and the electric rivers and how they would be used for transporting basically propulsion techniques between the star systems or between the planets, etc. And the whole concept of specific impulse, which is a physics term. But then I started developing more and more into the human aspect of the electric highways to the stars. In other words, the human being has to be adapted to electrical conditions to also be able to fulfill their destiny relative to the electrical nature of the universe. Okay, I'll be doing some more discussions of this in the future. Now I want to change topics. A couple recent things that were in the news was that, I don't know who came up with this, but somebody challenged Elon Musk, who is a billionaire, one of the world's richest people, at least richest on paper, normal, common rich people, the ultra, ultra rich people. You never see their faces or their names. But of the people who are categorized as rich people, Elon Musk is back and forth one of the richest people in the world. But somebody said, hey, Elon, if you take $6 billion of your money, it would cure world hunger. And Elon comes back and says, well, geez, I'd do that in a second, but you got to tell me what this is going to do. And, you know, just knowing numbers in the world, et cetera, and the dire problems of hunger in the world, et cetera, and the, you know, moving products to the world and the economies of the world and how these third world countries have been put under severe economic stress because the World Bank has given these countries loans and the country can't pay back the loan, so these international corporations go in and rape and pillage the country of its natural resources, leaving the people destitute. And that's why there's billions of people starving to death in the world today. But at any rate, if you look at this number, 6 billion, and you imagine that just making an estimate that 50% of the people in the world are going hungry, not eating proper, having proper nutrition, $6 billion is about $2 a piece. I mean, that's going to get you through the first day or 2 days with a little bit of food, and then that's it. So how is $6 billion going to solve the world food problem? That's just, to me, it's an absolutely ridiculous claim. And why would anybody target Elon Musk? And I think they also included Bezos maybe in this. They take some of their wealth. And, of course, they're up to the close to $100 billion in wealth. So it would just be a small fraction of their money. It's like if you had $10, this would be 60 cents to you, not much money. But the point is that this would be about $1 or $2 a piece for all of the homeless, hungry people in the world, and it really wouldn't do much. And just money, I mean, what's it going to do? Buy a few bags of rice for the next day or two, and then that's it? It doesn't make any sense. It was rather a poorly crafted statement, and I didn't read much beyond just seeing the various videos that came out about this. But where these people come up with this, with these ridiculous concepts, clearly not thinking very well at all. Now, the next thing I want to talk about, as we're heading into the holidays here, there is something that a lot of people do. They go out and buy presents, which is great, or they buy gifts. And Christmas is coming up. I'm a Christian. I like Christmas celebration. And I kind of like the kids aspect of it, too, where the, you know, kids get presents and they talk about Santa Claus and the elves and all the other dozens of stories that have the Grinch, you know, which I don't like at all. I thought that was, I never liked those stories, the Grinch that stole Christmas. I never liked that. But back to the point here that if you're going to spend some hard-earned cash, then I think the best presents are ones that are going to last, that ones that people are going to use every day for years and years and years and years to come, and that it's going to do something for the people, not just sit on a table, not a expensive vase that sits in a glass case, but something that's going to do something for your grandchildren, for your grandparents, for your uncles and aunts and nephews and nieces and kids, etc., or buy something for the family and say, this year we're going to buy a gift for the family and make it a JMCC water filter's whole house water filter, the MR5. For under $2,000, which would include the price of the plumber to install it, we don't send out plumbers. We don't work with plumbers to install them because it's a very special thing. There's local codes. There's local rules that they have to follow that might be relative to the water department. It might be relative to a housing development. It might be to a municipal area. It might be laws regarding wells or whatever. And so we don't get involved in any of that in the installation. But what we do is we help the plumber install the MR5 so it's successfully installed the first time and is a carefree installation. And Within a few hours, you have clean water. We ship directly to your door. There's no middleman. There's no brick-and-mortar store, because what we do is we service the whole country. And so there's no way we could have a brick-and-mortar store in every little town and every big city, etc. And so that's one way we keep costs down, is shipping it directly to you from our warehouse. And a number of years ago, I developed this product, and there's just literally nothing else like it anywhere. That's the MR5. It's a true whole house water filter. It's not a water softener. A water softener is a kind of a fiberglass tank with a little teeny top. You put some resin in there, and it removes maybe one or two toxins, or in a lot of cases, not even toxins, but minerals. That's a water softener. And a broad-spectrum water filter like the MR5, what I'm selling, is a product that very high quality. When you put it in, the stainless steel housing of the MR5 is so nicely done and polished that you literally could put it in the middle of your dining room table for Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner, and it would fit in with any setting. That's how beautiful these are. Stainless steel, number 304 stainless, and right now they're on sale. The typical price is $1,766 for the MR5, but they're on sale for $1,699, and you can get another 10% off by using the coupon code JMCC, four letters, JMCC, at checkout. You put that in the coupon code, and it'll calculate a 10% discount on anything you buy there on the webpage. The webpage is jmccwaterfilters.com. That's plural, filters, jmccwaterfilters.com. And so this holiday season, this Christmas season, buy the gift that keeps on giving to the family, to the relatives, to your boss. You want to impress your boss? Get him a water filter. And you know what he's going to say, or she's going to say? Oh, I never thought about that. A water filter. You know, isn't my water good? The water company says my water is good. Excuse me. Every water company in the country is going to tell you they have water that meets federal standards. And you know what? They probably do. They probably do meet federal standards, but the federal standards are so weak, they're so old, that they don't have any reality to them. There's so much bad stuff in the water today: pharmaceuticals, chemicals, volatile organic chemicals, heavy metals, agricultural runoff, glyphosate, nitrates. Oh my goodness. Cancer-causing stuff in your water, PFAS chemicals. You got to get all this stuff out of your water. So I'm going to cut this short, but I just want you to think about this. Like I say, the MR5 filter, once you get that extra 10% off, you're down to around $1,400 for a whole house water filter. A lot of water softeners out there, they're charging $3,000, $4,000, even $5,000 or $6,000 for a water softener that just takes a few minerals out of your water. This is a product that's going to remove the pollutants, the toxins. And let me just add something here that's very important. In fact, I was just talking to a doctor who bought one for himself, and he's going to become an affiliate, by the way, and sell these through his medical office. And he was talking to me, we were just talking back and forth as we were introducing, he was learning about the MR5 product, and he said, and you ought to know that the most toxins you get are in the shower. And I'm like, wow, this is a doctor saying exactly what I've been saying, a doctor, a medical doctor, and he treats patients on a daily basis that have toxic overload. That's what he does. That's what this doctor is doing. And he's understands that you need to get this stuff out of the water. And in the biggest dose you're going to get is in the shower. A lot of people don't realize that. If you take a big glass of water that's got toxins in it, your liver, your kidneys are going to filter a lot of that out, and a lot of that's going to go out as solid waste or it's going to go out in the urine. But if you're in the shower, that warm water, it goes right into your skin, right into your bloodstream. If you're breathing in that vapor, it goes right into your lungs and right into your bloodstream. And then it goes into your cell, and then it starts to accumulate and accumulate every day, more and more, 5 years, 10 years. Here's an example. Here's an example of accumulated toxins and toxicity. Imagine I say to you, you've got a little backpack on. I say, I'm going to put an ounce in your backpack every day. And, you know, and you say, okay, no big deal. Okay, not a big deal. And after a half a month, after 16 days, let's say I'm going to put an ounce of weight into your backpack. After 16 days, you have a pound. Yes, hardly notice that. After a month, you're going to have 2 pounds. After a year, you're going to, after 12 months, you're going to have 20, about, these are round numbers, about 24 pounds. And after 5 years, you're going to have over 125 pounds of stuff, these little 1 ounce at a time, in your backpack. And so that's after 5 years, 125 pounds. How about 10 years? 250 pounds by putting an ounce a day in your backpack. And so my point is that over time, your cells are accumulating these toxins that come in through the shower. And so you got to get this stuff out of your water. You have to get it as much out of your water as possible. And people might say, well, I can buy one of those little shower filters at the big box store. Let me tell you something, folks. Those don't work. There's a little handful of charcoal in those things that takes out a little bit of, it's going to change the smell of the water for the first couple days you use it, and that's it. What you need is a industrial strength, commercial strength, whole house water filter that takes toxins out. The whole house water filter that I sell lasts up to 57,000 gallons, has a flow rate of 12 gallons per minute. And this is what you need. It's a point of entry in the house or in an apartment building. And what happens is it filters the water before it goes and splits out to hot and cold water, which then gets piped into your house. So the hot and the cold water are filtered in the house. And so the kitchen, you can fill up your water bottle. And this is something I tell people too. If you're one of those people that's buying filtered or buying bottled water, it's not filtered. It's, in a lot of cases, Coca-Cola has a big plant up on Lake Superior where they got a big tube going out into the bottom of the lake, and they're sucking the water in and putting it right in the bottle. No processing, no filter, nothing. And so that's typical. Bottled water is just what you're getting. Bottled water. It's tap water in a bottle. So what I tell people is you can pay for your MR5 whole house water filter by simply filling up your water bottle at home and taking your bottled water with you instead of buying those plastic bottles. So there's a good incentive. And imagine the family, a family of four. Imagine that on average they each buy a bottle of water a day out there, those little thin plastic bottles. That's going to be enough within less than a year to pay for your MR5 whole house water filter. Imagine that. And now you can take, fill up your water at home, fill up all the water bottles, take it, and you have clean water, whereas the water bottle does not have clean water in it typically. So anyway, I'm talking a little bit over on this, but we're heading into that season where people are starting to plan, well, what am I going to do for this Christmas for grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, or the kids, or what are we going to do for the family, you know? And the MR5 whole house water filter is the solution. Remember that you get 10% off the already sale price. You get another 10% off using the coupon code JMCC. That's it. Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the other filters that I sell. I have the sink filter, which is a beautiful stainless steel fixture that goes on your sink. a big, big, high flow rate arm that overhangs that swivels in 360 degrees. So you can have filtered water in the kitchen on the counter or over the sink. And it connects into the cold water under the sink. And this is a really, really nice filter. It has a the same quality filter as in the MR5 and a very high flow rate. A lot of the complaints that people have over the filters that go by your sink is that they have a very low flow rate. And these have a very high flow rate. So they're very handy. When you want water in the kitchen, but if you have a whole house water filter, you don't need this. But there are people, for example, doctor's offices or therapist's offices, where you want to give somebody a drink of water, then put one of these in your sink at the office. Or if you have out in the shed, if you have a sink and you want to have a place where you can get a clean glass of water out there, out in the work shed or something like that, put one of these in. There is a place for them. And also the JMCCHI, my latest, greatest water filter elements for gravity feed water filters. And they're on sale also. That's $169 for a set of four or $359 for a 10-pack. And all of these include free shipping. Free shipping to the USA for the MR5. There is an extra charge for shipping to Alaska and Hawaii. Unfortunately, things get pretty pricey when you start shipping there. So we end up charging people a bit for those. We split the shipping if you're in Hawaii or Alaska for the MR5. But the gravity filters, we don't charge any extra shipping at all for any place. 50 states, there's free shipping for the sink filter and for the HI replacement filters for gravity filters. And they are amazing. They are the best filter on the planet, bar none. And in fact, let me just tell you a little story here. We have been running out of these, very heavy ordering on those little gravitational filters, because people are learning I have the best ones on the planet. And the HI technology with the amazing, the latest technology designed into that filter. And I'm just about out of time here. So once again, wishing you the very best of holidays coming up here. Enjoy yourself. Try and stay sane in this crazy world we live in. And consider that. What are you going to do for the people you know, the people you love, the people you want to have healthy? The best gift you can give them is the gift of health and clean water. So visit my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. And I'm out of time, so we'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.